is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSIN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey on this Father's Day. We wish all the fathers out there a very happy Father's Day, and a very happy Father's Day to you, Michael Lombardi.
Yeah, it's a great day. Obviously, happy Father's Day to everybody. To enjoy the time and to really kind of be thankful for the greatness that you have with, my two sons have been such an inspiration to my life, and it's a time to reflect on that, certainly, and give them thanks for being incredible. So, yeah, it's a wonderful day, and it starts with family. You know, without my wife being able to help raise them, I don't know if they would have turned out, because I wasn't home very much. I was too busy working.
Yeah, always at the grind, and now they're on the grind working for the NFL, obviously with the Raiders and everything and all that stuff. So it's see how football has been passed down through the generation of the Lombardis there. But yeah, happy Father's Day to my father. Everyone always asks me, because I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, they're like, how the hell did you become a Dallas Cowboys fan? Well, I was born just outside of Dallas, and my father passed the Cowboys down to me. So that's why I root for the damn team. Yeah.
Yeah, Barbershop, you know, he's a Yankee fan growing up. I became a Yankee fan growing up. He wasn't much into football, so he really didn't have a team in that, and either basketball. So, the Yankees are kind of his team, so it's always was something that I rooted for and loved going to Yankee Stadium with them. Those are great Father's Day memories.
No, it definitely is Father's Day memories. And obviously we have the U.S. Open, which will be a fun Father's Day memory. It's a tradition unlike any other that we have, not to steal the line from the Masters, but I mean, it's kind of a tradition that we have U.S. Open Father's Day weekend. But we do have a fun show that's on tap over the next 2 hours. Coming up in 30 minutes, Rex Hoggard, senior writer for the Golf Channel, will join us to break down the final round of the U.S. Open, where we do have a tie atop the leaderboard. It is Ricky Fowler and Wyndham Clark both at 10 under. Then at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, Thomas Gable, the race and sportsbook director at the Borgata, will join us. We missed Thomas yesterday, but we'll get him on today to break down the U.S. Open. Then to end the show, a little crosstalk with our buddy Dave Ross, host of The Handle, which follows our program here on VSIN. He is also the host of the First Strike podcast here at VSIN, and like myself, a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan. So we'll break down all things U.S. Open. We'll talk a little America's team as well. I know, Michael, you're excited to have Dave Ross.
I'll leave you two guys alone. You can talk Cowboys if you want. You know, you can kind of convince yourself how it always is. That's how Cowboy fans always are. June, July, and August, you're all convinced everything's going to be okay.
No, I mean, I feel like we're honest Cowboys fans. Dave, I think, is a little bit more optimistic than I am. I'm a little bit more pessimistic by nature. But this year, I'm buying what Dave is selling. I'm buying the Kool-Aid here. I think the Cowboys are being a little overlooked there. He's been trying to convince me for about 3 weeks now to go ahead and follow him with this Cowboys bet to win the division there. I think they do win the division. I'm trying to kind of find the right time to go ahead and make that bet, because market entry is just as important as picking whichever team that you like as well. But right now, at our friends at the South Point, the Cowboys are 2-1 to win the NFC East. So maybe that's something that I get in my pocket between now and the start of the season. So we'll go ahead and ride the America's team train here on the Lombardi.
A lot of stuff in it. I mean, you got 5 or 6 Justin Fields tickets in there. That pocket's heavy. That pocket's got a lot of stuff in it. There's no question. That's a heavy pocket. You might need another pocket. You might need a man purse. You know, that you might need that.
I mean, that's what the kids do these days. They got the satchel across.
I mean, that'd be a great gift for you. Yeah, exactly. You know, one pocket for the, you know, all the Justin Fields props that you've played, one for Tua. You know, you got so many. I mean, you might need a 5-pocket man's purse.
We'll see about that. The Justin Fields tickets, those ones, I still have not seen them for some reason. Maybe you've seen these tickets that have my name on them. I haven't seen them just yet.
The window, but I got pictures. I mean, yeah. You can't travel with that circuit without people snapping shots of you, Femi. I know that.
Well, let's get into the big story of the day, and that is the final round of the U.S. Open. Like I mentioned, tie atop the leaderboard, Wyndham Clark 10-under, Ricky Fowler 10-under. What did you make of yesterday's action? Where it got a little bit exciting and kind of the guys came down to the pack just a touch.
I think to me, just watching it, I mean, I'm outside last night with the great Bill Berman and my son Matthew, and we're sitting out there on the back watching the game out on the outdoor television, and I'm like, it's 10:15 at night, and they're not done yet. And I'm like, whoa, what is, you know, like, this is ridiculous. I agree. Like, whose idea was it to have these late starting times? And, you know, the marine layer was coming in. you know, the greens were getting harder and the shot making wasn't as easy, and obviously the pressure. I mean, first of all, I thought Fowler, when he made that 70-foot putt, which was just flat-out incredible, I thought, boy, that's great momentum. And then he three-putts the 18 as he comes in. So what I made of it is it was a dumb idea to start so late after 3 o'clock. And B, the pressure's going to be even greater. You know, when you shoot par on that, if you don't make hay on the front on the first nine, it's hard to make up on the back nine or the second nine. And so for me, that's kind of what I thought of it. I thought the late start did hurt them, you know, as all the players complained about. Mm-hmm. And I do think the pressure is going to start mounting.
You mentioned the back nine and how difficult it was playing. I mean, Ricky Fowler, prior to that bogey on 18, he hadn't bogeyed since 5. So he was really playing that back nine well, because we saw a lot of guys dropping off. My guys, Dustin Johnson, Cam Smith, DJ, he still has a long shot right now, 5 back of the lead. But like, those guys were struggling on that back nine. We saw Harris English, who was right at the near the top, struggling. Rory McIlroy had a bogey on that back nine. And I was like, man, is Ricky going to go flawless through this whole thing? And it was kind of Dan Hicks on the broadcast sort of kind of jinxed him a little bit there right before he was putting on 18. And then he three putts, like you mentioned. So Fowler then gets to 10 under. But you mentioned the darkness. Now, here's what Wyndham Clark had to say, who will be in the final pairing with Ricky Fowler. He said, yeah, this is a little ridiculous that we teed off that late. I would say right around the hole 15 or 16, it started getting to where you couldn't see that well. I mean, I don't personally understand why we teed off. We played Twilight Golf. At the end, it was the last two holes. I 100% think my bogey on 17 was because I couldn't see, and I think Ricky's bogey on 18 was because he couldn't see. I'd like to see us go off an hour and a half, 2 hours earlier. If we had a playoff tomorrow, we wouldn't even be able to play the playoff tomorrow because it was so dark. With that said, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but it was definitely a challenge. So I don't know if this was an adjustment that was always in the works, but we're teeing off a little earlier today.
I mean, the U.S. Open, though, they go 18 holes on a playoff. They don't just go and they play all 18. If I remember correctly, I can remember Fuzzy Zeller playing Greg Norman at Wingfoot for 18. Mm-hmm. And then I remember Tiger beating Rocco Mediate on 18 on a full 18 at Downton Sand at La Jolla.
So they've tweaked it now. They've tweaked it. So now it's like a 3-hole aggregate, I believe, is what it is. We haven't seen the new form of the playoff because we haven't had a playoff in the wild at the U.S. Open. But you are correct. It used to be that 18 holes on that Monday, but now it'll be like a 3-hole aggregate, I believe. So they'll be able to play that Sunday if it's still light up.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be light out by them starting that late, even though they're on the West Coast time. And I don't remember when they played at Pebble that they had these late times. I always think the final group goes off at 2:00 and 2:30, which apparently they're going to do today. But the bigger issue is the pressure, right? I think the greens are getting firmer. I think it's harder to hold, and the pressure. You know, I thought that Ricky Fowler handled it well up until the last hole where he three putted. But to me, you know, his driving ability was so good. And then I read his quotes after the round about how he feels like he's finally in the right mental framework to handle this, whether it was a major or not. So, you know, it's kind of remarkable. It's been 4 years, Femi, since Ricky Fowler's won a tournament. Mm-hmm. Forget about a major. 4 years. I mean, that's a hard thing to rekindle. You know, you haven't been in this competition for 4 years to really close it out. It's going to be fascinating to see if he can do it.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's going to be thinking about that putt on 18 there for quite a while, and we'll see if he's able to respond or if that maybe leaks into his final round, especially early on. I'm curious to see how that sort of plays out. We would be remiss if we didn't mention one Scottie Scheffler. I mean, Scheffler, the Eagle 2 on 17 yesterday, just the shot of the tournament. One of the best shots in U.S. Open history that we're talking about on the broadcast. 196 from the fairway. Holes out and then follows that up with a birdie on 18. And Scheffler, who prior to that was 4 under, gets to 7 under. And then you have Fowler coming back to the pack a little bit with the bogey on 18. And now Scottie Scheffler, the best player in the world, is only 3 back.
Yeah, and he's lurking out there. And I think that's certainly going to create more pressure because he's such a great ball striker. And this is going to require today incredible ball striking ability with your iron play. And Scottie's putter, when it gets going like it was, I mean, and even through all the round, I mean, they missed that I think it was the 14th. He had a par on the par three, the short par three, had a chance for a birdie there, and he just missed it. Kind of misread the putt, actually. So, yeah, with him there and then Rory there, that's going to create some momentum. And if they get off to a quicker start, you know, you can hear the crowd noise throughout there. It's going to put a lot of pressure on Ricky Fowler to kind of go in there. And where is Wyndham Clark going to hold up? How did he, you know, I mean, he got, you know, he had that bad chip and kind of had a double hit it. He had to go back again. And then he rallied back to be able to get even par for the day. So, look, that was the lowest round of the tournament. I think, to me, if you could shoot par or just slightly below par today, I think you're going to win this thing. Now, obviously, Scottie Scheffler is going to have to shoot below that. But to me, if you're Ricky Fowler, if you can put, you know, one under or two under, you got a chance here.
Yeah, and that's what I'm curious. We're going to ask Rex Haggard about this a little bit later on, is that, like, what's the winning score? Is it going to be 10-under? Maybe it's 9-under, and some of these guys come back to the pack because it plays so difficult and the pressure on top of all of that as well. So it's an interesting dynamic here with those two guys, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, big-time pedigree players chasing the guys who have yet to win majors in Wyndham Clark and Ricky Fowler. So somebody always goes low on a Sunday. That's one thing that you can kind of guarantee. And it's usually a guy that's a little bit further off the pack, kind of just playing that pressure-free golf. Someone goes low, and I'm curious to see if there's a low round that's out there. We saw Tom Kim yesterday shoot a 66. He came from way back now in contention for the top 10. Not really going to win it here, but I think it'll be interesting to see if somebody that's kind of lurking, if it's maybe Dustin Johnson or Xander Schauffele, who had a tough round yesterday, if those guys can maybe have a really good front nine, maybe they can throw their hat in the ring as well before this thing is all said and done. But it'll be coming up later on this afternoon. The final pairing teeing off at 2:30 West Coast time, 5:30 Eastern. We'll have our eyes on that, and we'll talk some more U.S. Open coming up a little bit later on in the show. But coming up next, we'll get to other news and notes from around the NFL and also some trade news in the NBA that I want to get your thoughts on as well here. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets or where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way. VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in Las Vegas. And just to issue a quick correction on the U.S. Open playoff format, I said that it might be a three-hole playoff. It's actually a two-hole aggregate for the playoff for the U.S. Open if we do get a playoff. So they will play hole number one, which is a par five, and then they'll go back to 18, which is the par four out there at the Los Angeles Country Club. So that would be the situation if we do get a playoff. Right now we have two guys atop the leaderboard, Wyndham Clark and Ricky Fowler at 10-under. I don't know if you caught this, Michael, on the broadcast. They mentioned it. I think it was Paul Azinger said the last 24 champions of the U.S. Open have been within four shots or better. So that's kind of the line of demarcation right there. You're probably looking at a four-horse race. Scottie Scheffler is in the mix there, only three back there, but you have Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, and Wyndham Clark. And the odds reflect that. One of those four guys likely to win it. I mean, at BetMGM, Rory's 2-1, Fowler's plus 250, Clark plus 275, and Scheffler's plus 450. So we're all kind of jumbled here, and we're going to see who kind of takes a hold of this thing later on this afternoon.
Who you bet?
Of those four guys, I would go with the longer price Scottie because he's the best player and he's the longer price. But I still have apprehension with Scottie's putter. Like, I get the way he ended yesterday was terrific, and he's definitely putting some scare in those guys atop the leaderboard. But his putter has been so bad this season, and it's prevented him from winning about two or three more tournaments, that I don't know if I could rely on it right here on a Sunday. I think this might be Rory's time. It's been 9 years, Michael. It's been 9 years since Rory's won a major. This thing is set up for him to go ahead and do it. I don't know if I don't trust Ricky Fowler or Wyndham Clark. They've never done it at a major. I think Rory's going to win this thing.
You know, I've seen Rory melt down too many. Those 9 years in between this have created some doubt, some serious doubt in my mind. The 4 years of Ricky Fowler not winning have created serious doubt. So I think Scottie Scheffler's a good play. The numbers reflect a good number. And you just hope that maybe his putter can catch fire, you know, and because the one thing is his iron play is spectacular. And whoever wins today is going to have the best iron play in terms of not just greens and regulation, but being in the right spot. I mean, you have to be able. I mean, look, Rory was in the wrong spot in three putts, you know, so you can't have that. I mean, Fowler made that incredible 70-foot putt. Mm-hmm. But when he was looking over that putt, you're thinking this could be a three putt for sure. And he ends up birdie in that hole. So I think a lot of it is not just great iron play, but iron location, depending on where these pins are today, which will be fun to ask Rex about that as we have him on in the next block.
Yeah, to your point, Scottie Scheffler's irons right now are absolutely terrific. It's almost to like peak Tiger Woods level. Almost there. He's not quite there, but it's almost to that level, which is why he's still been able to finish in the top five and the top tens in these tournaments, despite not really putting very well. So if he does find that putter, it's good night. Close the book. Scottie Scheffler is going to win. But he hasn't really found it yet. And to your point, Rory has – I mean, you don't even have to go back 9 years for Rory. This is just this past month. He's been imploding on these Sundays. So we'll see what happens later on today. I think it's going to be really interesting, though. There's going to be some moving and shaking. Like, I think we have a curveball that's coming our way here with this U.S. Open. It always kind of happens in a major. I think we'll have a curveball, and I don't know who's going to emerge, but my guess would be Rory. I would go with the chalk right now at 2-1 over at BetMGM. But let's get to some news. Before we get into the NFL, Michael, I wanted to ask you about this news from the NBA, because Shams Charania over at The Athletic is reporting that Bradley Beal could be on the move pretty soon. Bradley Beal, of course, the guard for the Washington Wizards, has made an all-star, and apparently there have been two suitors who have emerged, one being the Miami Heat, which is not surprising. We had JVT on yesterday. He mentioned the Miami Heat, but the other one, the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns with new owner Matt Ishbia, they made the trade for Kevin Durant at the trade deadline last season. They have Devin Booker already in the fold. That it's believed that a Chris Paul, Landry Shamet deal is what it would take for Beal to choose to waive his no-trade clause for the Suns. That is being reported by Chris Haynes over at Bleacher Report. So either the Heat or the Suns is where it sounds like Bradley Beal might end up.
I think, you know, Bradley Beal has complete control of this because of the no-trade clause. And look, you know, the guarantee in Chris Paul's contract is such that, you know, if you waive him before, I think, June 28th, he still gets $15 million, but you don't guarantee the entire $30 million. So you know that Phoenix is going to do something with him before that. It all really depends on where Washington is in their timeline. You know, mm-hmm. What assets are they taking back? The one thing I don't think we're talking enough about when it comes to the NBA is the new CBA and how the cap is going to be affected. And if you have two players making a huge salary in that $40 to $50 million range, Beal, I think his last year is at $49 million. I mean, it really limits your options. It limits your options tremendously. And Phoenix is a team that has a problem in the sense that Ayton's contract, no one wants. They have no market for Ayton, mm-hmm. and they signed him, so they can't move him. So if they take Beal back along with Ayton, where are they going to have their depth? Right? Where will their depth come from? And listening to Woj talk on the Ryan Russillo pod, you know, he mentioned that Beal, if he can be convinced that Washington is going to play well, he might in fact try to stay. But there's a lot of moving parts in this NBA, and a lot of it has to do with the CBA and how teams handle that. One thing I think for sure is the tanking of teams. I mean, Detroit's going to sign players. Washington, are they tanking? What are they doing if they trade Beal? I think that would be the only team. But I think ultimately these teams are going to try to get involved, and we're going to limit some of the tanking that's been going on.
Do you like this new CBA? Because I almost think that it sort of penalizes teams for drafting well and developing. Like in the instance of the Golden State Warriors, if the CBA was in place 10, 15 years ago, maybe they're not able to keep Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson because those guys would want their money, but the new CBA makes it almost impossible to have three stars making max-level money.
Well, I think this new CBA is really about they don't want all-star teams.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't want the players to say, okay, we're going to have a big three, and let's go here, and let's make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this limits it. Right. So, you know, that's why you have to be very careful. That's why Philadelphia, if they extend Harden and Harden has to get that fourth and fifth year guarantee because you're worried about Houston, boy, that's going to put you in deep trouble. And if you have a guy on your roster that is injury prone, let's take Zion Williamson. I mean, here's a guy who's played 4 years in the NBA, but really only three. He's got, what, 114 games that he's actually played in over those 4 years? Think about that.
Yeah, that's like right? 2 years.
His draft is 4 years. It'll be 4 years ago, you know? And he's played 114 games, and his new contract's going to kick in. You know, now I get that he's only 23 years old, but what do you do with that if you're the general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans? You kick this in. The guy has not – one thing he's proven, besides off-the-field issues, is he can't stay healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what he's proven. I mean, for a guy to miss 6 months with a hamstring, and then do you want to turn around and guarantee him 5 years at 100, and knowing that that he has to be one of your guys to build your franchise around? I think that's the fascinating question. I think this is why this NBA offseason is going to be the most fascinating, because it relates to this cap and that you basically now can only have two superstars. I mean, what happens if Philadelphia signs Harden to this huge contract? I mean, they have to get rid of Tobias Harris. And then who takes him?
Yeah. No, and to your point on Zion, only one season where he's played 30-plus games. And we're 4 years into
and
this.
And nobody
thing.
Has a – it's amazing. No one has a – except me. Like, I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, you know, the guy misses 6 weeks with a hamstring – 6 months with a hamstring. At some point, how does that player become your pillar to build a championship team? Well, what would be the return for him? I don't know. I think it's worth an investigation. We know he has weight issues. Mm-hmm. We know he has conditioning issues, and those translate into durability issues.
Yeah, and he's not on the floor. That's simply as that. Like I was so rooting for him to be a player that would actually be healthy and durable when he was coming out of Duke, because I'm like, this guy is so fun to watch when he plays, but he hasn't played. 114 games in 4 seasons, that's just like – It's not good enough. It's not good enough. My last thing on the CBA, though, I do think it is a little bit of a bummer that, like, if you do draft well, you do get penalized for this because you can't keep those guys and draft and develop. And I get they want parity in the league and they don't want teams to be cellar dwellers. They don't want that. But, like, in the instance, like, how Oklahoma City, how they traded James Harden when they had Durant and Westbrook, it's like you should be rewarded for drafting well and developing those guys.
Well, I mean, I think you can. I mean, but you also know that, you know, you have two really good players. You have to have role players. You have to have the right pieces around them. I mean, building a basketball team is like building a rock and roll band. You don't always – you can win a title without five all-stars. You just got to have the two guys that carry the team, and you have to have an alpha male that can drive the team.
Yeah, it is interesting, though. The new CBA, it's why we're going to get some trades this offseason, why we're going to see some movement and shaking among some of these contenders. It's going to all start probably this upcoming week with the NBA draft, which is on Thursday. I know you have your eyes on that. You've been scouting Wembanyama? You've been getting that tape in?
I don't know. I don't really worry about scouting him. Plus, the Sixers don't have a draft pick until I turn 80, so I don't know. I mean, what's the sense of me scouting?
Rex Hoggard joins us next from the Golf Channel here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Chucking along on a Father's Day Sunday here in the month of June. We wish everybody a happy Father's Day out there. Hopefully everyone's able to celebrate, have a little bit of fun and appreciation on this day. Michael Lombardi, Femi Abebefe, we're hanging out here on VSiN, the sports betting network, and joining us now to help us talk some U.S. Open, one of our favorite Father's Day traditions. Actually, we're going to go ahead and call Rex back here. Rex Hoggard is set to join us here shortly here on the Lombardi Line. But I'm curious, Michael, I want to ask Rex about Ricky Fowler, because the whole lead up, and like, I mean, this has been something that's beyond just this weekend, but he's never been able to win the major. He's finished top 10 in all four majors. Like, how does he sort of handle this, especially after the way the round ended yesterday? Like, is he able to kind of let that go and have a short memory, or does that start to linger into his mind with so much pressure now that he's in the final group?
Well, I think he's been really trying to work hard at his game. I think there's no question about that. I mean, the putter that he uses was his caddy's putter. He was struggling so mightily with putting that, you know, he decided that he was playing a round of golf with his caddy and it just kind of borrowed the putter from him that we see here on the screen, and he kind of made that his putter and he started putting better. So, I mean, this has been an ongoing process. I think one thing about being a great golfer is you have to constantly work at your swing, but you also have to work at the mental aspect of your game to be able to have your swing hold up under pressure. Much like playing quarterback in the NFL, it's one thing to sit there and be Buzz Lightyear's ahead of where you were last year, But when the game's playing and the game's moving faster, that Buzz Lightyear's has to transfer. And we're going to find out today all the work that Ricky's put in, if it's going to pay off. We shall see.
Yeah, I love when we have a major setup where there's two guys that have not done it, and then there's two guys behind them that have done it. Scheffler's only won one major, but he's won a bunch of other tournaments, and he feels like he's going to be a multiple-time major winner pretty shortly here. Maybe it's even today. But Rory McIlroy obviously has won multiple majors. He's won every single one except for the Masters. So it's kind of like that dynamic where there's those champions of the past sort of pushing those guys who are trying to have that ultimate breakthrough. I mean, Wyndham Clark is also looking to have an ultimate breakthrough as well there. I know they were asking him or talking about it on the broadcast yesterday that Wyndham Clark, although it's Father's Day weekend, he was always been motivated by his mother. His mother passed about a decade ago when he was still in college, and that really kind of shook him up at that time, as it would most people at a very young age. But that's sort of his inspiration for playing so well, and she always told him, hey, man, like, if you're going to play, play with a purpose, and he has a big purpose today.
Yeah, no question. I mean, look, if the thrill of trying to get to where, and I think the problem is you can't think of the finish line today, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's really about staying in the moment and really think just about your first tee shot. I think we talked about that with Brooks Koepka when he was playing in Rochester at the PGA. Remember, the Masters, that first tee shot on one went way left, and he never really recovered. He kind of struggled on that Sunday when we thought he was going to be able to win. Came close, but not good enough. I think that's really everything that you do today is about just getting that drive off and playing the par five to start this tournament in a way to where you can birdie this par five, which has been a birdie hole in the early round. I think you've got to be able to play well on the first nine if you're going to have a chance to hoist that trophy at the end.
Yeah, it's almost like if you don't birdie that hole number one there, that par five, and it's not a good sign of what's to come there, because everyone's birdieing that hole, and you want to get off to a good start. And we'll see if those guys can do that coming up later on this afternoon here. We're working to still get Rex on, but while we have some time, Michael, let's get to buy or sell. Some headlines from the National Football League. The mini camps have all been done, and now we're waiting for training camp coming up later next month. The first one, free agents Dalvin Cook, the running back, and wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, they are in no rush to sign with new teams. Do you buy or sell?
I buy that. I think there's no question that is the case. You know, I think one thing about let's just take Dalvin Cook, for example. You know, there's always a narrative out there about what's going on in the world. I mean, there's a column being written on The Athletic about how it's an injustice that running backs don't get paid. Of course, no one does know any research on this, right? No one studies how many running backs have gotten paid. I mean, this is the first time in the last 3 years where there's the most running backs in the league making over $10 million. I mean, you go back to it. You got, Bijan Robinson's the highest paid back. I'm talking about cash value this year. Mm-hmm. You know, he's making over $13 million. McCaffrey's making making 12. Aaron Jones, we talked about, he redid his deal. Alvin Kamara, both at $11 million. Nick Chubb, but slightly below that. Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, Josh Pollard, McBarkley, all those guys. You know, I mean, that's the most that has ever been. Last year, there were only three guys making that much money. This year, I rattled off a bunch of them. So, to me, I don't see why Cook's not going to get his $9 million. I just don't know when that's going to happen. And to me, why sign today when you should wait until camp when all the things start to happen? The money's going to be there for Cook. I don't think there's any doubt. I'm sure the money will be there for Hopkins. Maybe not Beckham money, but the money will be there.
It's almost another example of we just have to be patient, you know? like we all want things to get done.
We also have to understand what the real narrative is, right? I mean, you know, back in the 21 season, you know, there was only three backs making over $10 million. In the 22 season, there was three backs making over $10 million. Now I just rattled off, what did I rattle off? Nine?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, come on. Like, it has the value as now Mixon might lose his job at some point or asked to take a pay cut. We know Aaron Jones was asked to take a pay cut to stay on the team. But this narrative that nobody wants to pay running backs isn't supported by what's going on in the landscape.
Well, I think it's just because people see that Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley and contract negotiations with their teams and those deals haven't been done yet. So everyone's like, well, do they not want to pay them? Why wouldn't they have paid them already? Well, I think that's where that stems from.
Why haven't they paid them, Femi? They haven't paid them because their market, the franchise number is above most of the market value. It's the law of economics. Why would I pay more than $10 million a year when when that's not really out there? You know, why would I do that? Why would I pay more than that? Why would I do that? You know, Miles Sanders, we talked about, he signed for $6 million. You know, James Conner, believe this or not, how he has kept his job, he's at $8.5 million this year at cash. You really think James Conner's going to have a good year on that team this year?
No, it's not set up to have a good season. I don't think anything is set up to do well in Arizona. But, yeah, I ultimately agree with you because I think that these are just things that the market will speak for itself. But I think that's just kind of what people see on the surface. Like, oh, Dalvin Cook is available. Saquon can't get paid. Josh Jacobs can't get paid.
It's an example of bad information. It's an example of people not understanding the league. It's another narrative that's a false narrative, which one of the things you listen to the GM shuffle, we try not to have a false narrative, mm-hmm. as you know. And try to dispute some of the stuff that's being talked about that, you know, oh, it's an injustice that they're not getting paid. Look, you know, they are. Somebody's got to say it. It's there. Everybody looks at the numbers. When you just go through all the numbers of the running back, it's not hard to find. And when you line it up over the year, it's not that impossible to see.
How about what's going on in Houston? There apparently is an open competition between quarterback C.J. Stroud and Davis Mills. Do you buy or sell that narrative?
I sell that narrative. I'm not buying it's open. I mean, first of all, you know, again, let's talk narrative. Davis Mills is thought of as an afterthought, even though your client, Justin Fields, and him are the same player statistically in the passing game. Actually, Mills is better. But your client is booming. Your client is going to be the MVP of the league, according to Danny O over at the Worldwide Leader. Meanwhile, Davis Mills isn't going to keep his job. You figure it out. I mean, that narrative is just, this is what we get into in the NFL, and as a betting network that we are, we have to kind of take this away. That being said, you know, we say it's Davis. Is Case Keenum more the competition for C.J. Stroud? They signed him, too.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I think to me what they paid for Stroud, at the end of the day, what they paid to get him, I think he's got to be the starter.
There have been a lot of rave reviews about C.J. Stroud from minicamp. People have been saying he's a leader and all this stuff.
Oh,
and people
my
been,
God.
I'm just, I, mean, I, I'm not I buying mean, it. I'm not buying it. I'm saying what's out there.
Oh, my God.
I just report the
of
news.
Of course, are they going to say? What would they say? I mean, like, well, what would they say? Oh, he's a bad leader. We can't have him. We just paid all this for him. We don't want him anymore. I mean, it's not a candy shop. You can't return the candy. I mean, it's like you're going to start promoting it. I mean, they're still saying how great Trey Lance is.
Well,
I mean, we got people that evaluate earthquakes betting on Trey Lance to be MVP. I mean, like, that's seriously. They're still talking about that. I mean, we watch him go through the bags, and he throws the ball 80 yards to the wrong way because his feet aren't aligned to his arm, and we've got people out there who are handling earthquakes that are also mentioning that he's going to be the MVP. Like, come on, give me a break.
You're not going to let that one go.
Why would I let it go? Why would I let it go?
You're just not going to let it go. You know, C.J. Stroud, I think he's going to be the Texans starting quarterback week one. I mean, the market's indicating
that.
I do
too, but I'm not buying
underdogs.
The rhetoric. I'm not buying the rhetoric.
And we'll continue the conversation on the other side. But I think the games are always played in the fall. We'll see how these guys do. The rhetoric, I mean, like you said, we hear a lot of nonsense this time of the year. And then 3 weeks into the season.
He's not had a bad offseason in 3 years. He's not had a good season in 3 years, but he's never had a bad offseason.
No, offseason champion. Maybe he's offseason MVP is what he is. I don't know if they hand that up, that award. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. We'll talk more buy or sell NFL headlines on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same game parlay wager with at least four legs on any MLB game. And if all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back in bonus bets up to $25. Only at BetMGM, the best place to bet on baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 plus or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out in Las Vegas here on this Father's Day. And Michael, we'll continue with our buy or sell NFL minicamp headlines. Now that minicamp is broken, we are off to training camp coming up next month. And this next one, this is one that I was not aware of until this morning, but our producer Elliot Bowman put this on the rundown, and I'm glad he did. It got to me to chuckle a little bit. But this is courtesy Ravens head coach John Harbaugh. And before John Harbaugh was a Ravens head coach, he was the special teams coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles under Andy Reid. And Eagles way back in 2004 went ahead and picked up Terrell Owens. Owens was awesome. They made the Super Bowl that year, but we know things kind of ended unceremoniously as that he found his way in Dallas just a couple years later. But John Harbaugh, now back in 2023, head coach of the Ravens, says this about Odell Beckham Jr. He's calling him a pro and compares his arrival in Baltimore to Terrell Owens' arrival in Philadelphia. Are you buying or selling that narrative?
Oh, I'd sell that completely. First of all, let's understand some things about Terrell Owens when he joined the Philadelphia Eagles. He was 31 years old. He was coming off a season in San Francisco where he played 15 of the 16 games, mm-hmm. right? You know, he averaged almost 14 yards a catch. He had 9 touchdowns, and he was, you know, responsible for 55 first downs that year. So he came in having played a lot and produced a lot. And so he was healthy coming in and took over the team and just really was sensational for the Eagles for that one season until it imploded. Then he went on to Dallas to score 38 touchdowns in 3 years, as you remember.
Yep.
So I don't see the similarities at all. I see the similarities in the sense that for some reason, Beckham has this star power attached to him that hasn't manifested itself beyond the great catch, that it hasn't showed up other than the first 3 years when he did have 38 touchdowns, but mm-hmm. he hasn't been able to duplicate that since. So, no, I don't see it this way at all, because one thing about Terrell Owens, the Hall of Famer, he has been consistently productive throughout his career. Mm-hmm. This is something Beckham can't say.
Yeah, and T.O. was always healthy, durable, I mean, worked his tail off. Like, Beckham, all indications are he works hard, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And this is the quote from Harbaugh. He said,
Are you sure he works hard? I mean, are you sure?
At least I see it on social
media. You're buying that. Yeah. You're buying the narrative. Okay, I got it. I just want to make sure
They put up those fun clips of him, you know, catching passes.
They do that for people like you to buy into it. Like, that's like a sales pitch, you know? It's like George Costanza parking his car in front of Yankee Stadium early in the morning and then never moving it. I mean, you buying it? He's an early riser. Yeah.
You calling him lazy? I mean, we can spin it out the other way. See, look at you laughing. All right,
durability is about staying healthy, right? It's about working hard.
Yeah. No. Harbaugh said this.
Zion Williamson, he's durable. He must really work hard. Well, out of shape. Does plays. I mean, you know.
Only everybody said Beckham's had a weight issue. There's none of that going on with Odell.
Go ahead. Keep defending your clients.
I'm just saying. Those kind of guys reach that level for a reason. This is John Harbaugh. And he, Odell Beckham, is in a place in his career where I feel like he has a lot to prove at this point. And I think he feels like he's going to be the healthiest he's been in a few years. So let's go. So John Harbaugh excited about Odell Beckham Jr. We'll see how it comes to fruition. But we did, to our credit, yesterday.
I think he was healthy in Cleveland when they tried to get him the football and they couldn't do it. You know, I think he was healthy there. I don't think he was unhealthy in Cleveland when they tried, you know, when he was supposed to be the guy that was going to get, you know, when I think he played, 15 games there in mm-hmm. Cleveland before they just had, you know, he scored 4 touchdowns.
Well, I mean,
you know, I mean, what did he have? 74 catches that year, and when he played those many games, he has not played. He's played basically 20 games in the last 3 years.
The Cleveland thing, you know what the rebuttal is with that one, though. I mean, we've done this.
I'd love to hear it from you, counselor.
We've done this dance before.
You have the floor, barrister. You have the floor.
We've done this dance before. I mean, the quarterback situation was not great. I mean, the quarterback situation was
okay. Yeah, I got it. Okay. Well, but I thought the receivers make the quarterback, though, Femi. Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out here now. DJ Moore is going to make Justin Fields better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Odell Beckham couldn't make Baker better? I mean, give me the logic here. Give me this. How is this working? You can't have it both ways now. You're going to have to decide here.
Well, this is deal or no deal.
This is buy or sell.
No.
Are you buying that narrative or selling that narrative? I want to hear this. Does the quarterback make the receiver better?
It works in concert.
Does the receiver make the quarterback? Because DJ Moore is going to make Justin Fields incredibly better. That's what I've heard on podcasts. So I want to know why Beckham didn't make Baker better. Well, I'll wait.
Baker's a lost cause. But I think it also it works in concert. The ultimate answer is that it works in concert. The quarterback needs the receiver needs a quarterback, because football is a team sport. It can't just be on one player. So you go from the Chicago Bears wide receiver room, which nobody would have been saying, hey, let me sign up for that with my team. They get DJ Moore. Now he has a good receiver to throw the football to. And we're going to start to see Justin Fields, who now is entering year number three, take that next step. As for Baker Mayfield, I mean, they gave him all the weapons. They gave him all the weapons, and he didn't play well. And then he went to another team. He didn't play well. And then he went to another team. So the league kind of agrees with me about Baker Mayfield in that instance. Like, nobody's clamoring for him to be their quarterback.
I didn't like Baker Mayfield coming out in the draft. So, I mean, I'm not on that side. I've never been a Baker Mayfield fan, ever. You know, in fact, the only thing I have said positively about Baker Mayfield is pro tape was better than Sam Darnold's pro tape. I would not argue that. So when they made the move in Carolina, it based on pro tape, you had to agree with it. But I was never a big fan. Go back and watch the Georgia tape when he struggled to throw the ball outside against man coverage.
No. I think the question you ask is fair, and I'm glad you asked it, but it works in concert, like a lot of things. You know, the truth lies in the middle is what they typically say.
Well, actually, the truth lies to how you want to manipulate the truth. But I got it. Okay, I got it. We'll get it. But Beckham will make anybody better. Yes, that's true.
This is out of our nation's capital. Our next headline. Wide receiver Jahan Dotson, entering his second year, thinks that Commanders quarterback situation is, quote, settled. Sam Howell's going to be our guy. Do you buy or sell?
I buy that. I buy that. I mean, I don't think it's a fair competition. I think they want Sam Howell to be the guy.
Yeah.
I think they're going to tolerate the early season mistakes, and they're going to try to grow through them and see if he can deliver. It's a lot of unknown. The unknown about what the offense is going to look like, the unknown about what the offensive line is going to look like. There's a lot of unknowns in our nation's capital. So I buy that. I think Sam Howell has, you know, for a fifth-round pick or a kid that had a really good freshman year that you thought he could be a future number one pick, kind of struggled at North Carolina through some tough times but rallied back. I do buy that. I think he's got a chance.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to see Sam Howell. We only seen him play one game so far in his NFL career, but I think he could be good. He could be bad. We just don't know. We haven't seen him really play.
It's interesting. In his one game, he played better than Ridder played in four games. Now, he threw an interception. Ridder didn't do that. But his timing, his rhythm, his feet tied to his arm was better in that one game than watching the four games that Ridder played. Yet, Atlanta's going to be a great team because Ritter's really coming along.
Yeah, man. The Atlanta thing, like, I'm on your side. I don't get it. Their win total's at 8.5, and the Commanders' win total's at 6.5. Like that, and maybe people
narrative.
Are buying.
That's why VSiN has such a great platform, is because our job is to destroy the narrative, because the narrative drives the betting market. And why do the books make all the money? Because they just play against the narrative, which is typically wrong.
Yeah. In the case of the Atlanta Falcons, I think it's wrong. We'll see. Maybe we're the ones that have egg on our face at the end of the season, but I don't think we will. I think that Atlanta thing is not as good as people think. Last one here. We got about a minute left. George Kittle, the 49ers, is not worried about their quarterback situation. Quote, we have a chance to win a lot of football games in a prime position to return to the NFC title game. Do you buy or sell?
I buy it. I mean, I think he feels like between Darnold and Brock Purdy, he's watched Brock Purdy throw, so he obviously knows he's going to be healthy. So he's saying that. And their defense carries them, and the way they run the football and the way they scheme a passing game, I think that's true.
Yeah. It's almost – they're the one team where they feel – and I've heard people say this – quarterback agnostic. That the way Kyle Shanahan is able to design the offense, he makes things friendly for the quarterbacks, and they've just been able to plug guys in there and win a lot of football games.
Now, that's not true at all. When they plugged Nick Mullins in, that didn't work. When they plugged C.J. Beathard in, that didn't work. When they plugged anybody other than Jimmy Garoppolo until Brock Purdy, it has never worked. Let's be clear here. Let's be very clear. When they played your guy Lance, it didn't work. Right, it only worked but with Garoppolo and Purdy. It doesn't work for everybody.
All right, let's talk about your boy Jimmy on the other side to start hour number two. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM.